stories, Palestinians denounced the German president's opposition to the International Criminal Court's investigation into Israeli war crimes. India reports over 850 new daily COVID deaths, taking its total toll beyond 400,000. It has also registered nearly 47,000 new daily infections. Also in the headlines, wildfires are burning through western Canada, forcing residents of the small town of Lytton to evacuate following the record-breaking temperatures. Welcome to the program. Hamas has reacted to the latest Israeli attack on Gaza. The Palestinian resistance movement says Israel's aggression could not affect the determination of the Palestinian nation to fight for their rights. Hamas spokesman Fawzi Barhoum called the Israeli attack a cover-up for the regime's increasing challenges. He said the attack is a show to appease what he called Zionist settlers. Barhoum stressed that resistance groups would confront Tel Aviv's hostile policies and would make it respect Palestinians' rights. On Thursday night, Israeli airstrikes hit areas south of the Gaza City. Tel Aviv claimed they were in response to Palestinians sending incendiary balloons toward Israel. In May, the regime launched an 11-day aggression against Gaza, killing nearly 260 Palestinians. For our news review. Palestinians have expressed strong disapproval of the German president's opposition to the International Criminal Court's probe into Israeli war crimes. Resistance movement Hamas said Frank-Walter Steinmeier's remarks are a blatant support for Israel's aggressive policies against the Palestinian nation. Hamas said such remarks will encourage Israel to continue its crimes and put their regime above international law. Palestinian Foreign Ministry said that the status of the State of Palestine at the international level is not subject to the opinions of the German president or his state. Steinmeier had said the ICC has no jurisdiction to probe Israeli crimes due to the absence of Palestinian statehood. Joining me to discuss this a little bit further will be Professor Saad Nimr of Political Science, Wood Berzeit University, who joins us via satellite out of the city of Ramallah. I will have the pleasure of hosting Gada Karmi with the Institute of Arab and Islamic Studies, that is, of the University of Exeter out of London via Skype. It's good to have you with us on the show. I'm going to begin with Professor Nimr in Ramallah, and perhaps, you know, ask him some reaction about what he thinks about the recent comments by the German official. Professor.
The German, they have a complex, they have a problem when it's related to Israel. All the time, Germany till today are still feeling the feel of guilt after what happened during the Second World War, and especially when we are talking about the Holocaust. So they are like, feel always that they are forced to defend Israel and try to defend Israel even in sometimes in a stupid way. For instance, the statement by the president of Germany, Steinmeier, it's absolutely, have nothing to do with the international law or even with the international politics. Once he said that the ICC should not prosecute against Israel or do anything against Israel, this is first of all not only an interference, but he's denying the Palestinian right to go to the international court. At the same time, he claims that Palestine is not a state, which is, again, this is not his business in this respect. Though Palestine is recognized as a state by the United Nations, and they are a member in the United Nations with an observer seat. Yet, Mr. Steinmeier, he denied that right for the Palestinians, and consequently denying the right for the Palestinians to go to the ICC to bring Israel in front of the ICC for its criminal records and for the violation of all laws and human rights.
Brother Carmi, in London, what do you think, ma'am?
Well, of course, I agree with that. Two points, really. First of all, it is really remarkable that the International Criminal Court agreed to this in the first place. We know the kind of pressure that was put on the chief prosecutor to drop the case, and what we heard is obviously only a little of what was the kind of pressure which was actually brought to bear on her. So, firstly, many thanks to the International Criminal Court for withstanding the pressure and going ahead. Now, the second point to make is that Germany is not alone in trying to interfere with this. We know that the United States, which is not even a member of the court, also has tried to, particularly under President Trump, to discredit the court. And the UK, where I live, the British government has expressed its disapproval of the case before the criminal court, implying that Israel is not guilty of anything. And obviously, people have gone so far as to say this is all anti-Semitic. Every kind of weapon that Israel can use, it's using against the International Criminal Court. Now, very briefly, I know I don't want to take up more than it missed by allotted time. As far as Germany is concerned, of course, it's quite right. The Germans have a complex, they have a psychological problem about Israel. They cannot understand that the war is over. The war was over a long time ago, and secondly, new generations have been born who were not complicit or even around at the time of Nazi rule. So Germany needs an internal examination of itself as to why it continues to fight Israel's corner.
Qadar Karmi with the Institute of Arab and Islamic Studies with University of Exeter in London. Madam, it was very good to have you with us. I also like to thank the time Professor Saad Nirmr gave today. He is with Birzeit University, who joined us via satellite out of Ramallah. Thank you very, very much, both. Welcome back. The spokesman for Iraq's Al-Nujaba resistance movement tells Press TV that Iraqi resistance forces are capable of retaliating against a recent U.S. attack on the country's popular mobilization units.
Hajj al-Shabi, or the popular mobilization units, try to acquire military equipment that can defend their country and can boost the deterrence of their country. That's why Hashd al-Shabi is capable right now to retaliate and attain and acquire aerial armament to stand against the American troops. And
Shamari said the recent U.S. attack was a terrorist act. The spokesman urged the United States to withdraw its troops from the country. He noted that the presence of American forces in Iraq is illegal. Last year, Iraqi lawmakers unanimously passed a bill mandating the expulsion of all foreign troops from the country. The spokesman also called on the Iraqi government to take a stronger position against U.S. attacks on PMU forces.
These violations has a number of reasons. The first reason is that the Iraqi government is weak. Now in Iraq, we need to take a real stance to summon the American ambassador and condemn such an act of aggression against the Iraqi sovereignty and to hold the American government responsible for such a violation of our sovereignty.
Shamari said the United States failed in its attempts to pit Iraq's army against the PMU forces. He added that Washington now wants to take the matters in its own hands. That is, and deal a blow to resistance groups. The United States targeted positions of the resistance forces along Iraq-Syria border on Monday. The PMU says four of its members were killed in the airstrikes. Well, Afghanistan says the U.S. military has officially handed over Bagram Air Base located near Kabul to the Afghan Army. The Defense Ministry said the Army, or the Afghan Army, will protect the base and use it to combat terrorism. The Ministry confirmed that all U.S. and NATO forces have already left Bagram Air Base. The Taliban militant group welcomed the pullout. They said the full withdrawal of foreign forces from Afghanistan will pave the way for Afghans to decide their future. Some 9,600 foreign troops should leave Afghanistan by a deadline of September the 11th. The deadline was set by U.S. President Joe Biden, who seeks to end America's longest war. It was launched in 2001 under the pretext of fighting terrorism. However, no peace has been yet achieved. India's total deaths from the pandemic have surpassed 400,000 after the country registered more than 850 fatalities in the past 24 hours. India also reported over 46,600 new cases during the same period. The total is now that is above 30.4 million there. The country witnessed a surge in COVID in April and May. That pushed daily cases there above 400,000 in the month of May. A new variant called Delta, which is highly transmissible, was identified afterwards. The strain has been reported in dozens of other countries as well, causing flare-ups and prompting new curbs. On Friday, South Korea's daily case count topped 800. That is the highest there in nearly 6 months. Thailand also reported record deaths for a third straight day with 61 fatalities. From Australia to Canada, where wildfires keep burning through west of that country after record-breaking temperatures there, residents of the small town of Lytton, that is in British Columbia, were evacuated as the blaze burned down trees and some structures. The fire spread so swiftly that people were forced to leave behind their belongings. Residents of another 87 properties north of Lytton were also ordered to leave. Lytton this week broke Canada's all-time hottest temperature record with nearly 50 degrees Celsius. In British Columbia, nearly 500 sudden deaths have been reported since last Friday amid the historic heat wave. Remaining in Canada, and Canada Day celebrations have been dampened by the discovery of graves of over 1,000 Indigenous children, a reminder of the country's dark colonial past. Today, various instances of discrimination against the Indigenous people and minorities show Canada has a long way to go in order to shake off racism. Here's a report.
For the first time in decades, Canada Day celebrations have been mostly muted as the country sees old wounds reopened. Various cities scrapped the celebrations following a series of horrific discoveries of unmarked graves around former Catholic schools for Indigenous children. Calls to scale back or cancel celebrations snowballed in May and June when almost 1,000 unmarked graves were found. Another discovery this week, comprising 182 graves of children aged 7 to 15, made matters even worse. The new findings have fueled outrage in the country over a lack of information and accountability regarding violations of Indigenous people's rights. The graves remind people of the horrors experienced by thousands of kids that were supposed to be assimilated into the white society in church-run boarding schools. Rallies have been held to honor over 4,000 victims of Canada's infamous residential schools, while Indigenous leaders have been calling for a thorough investigation. Prime Minister Justin Trudeau has described the discoveries as a shameful reminder of systemic racism and urged the Catholic Church to take responsibility. The Roman Catholic Church is yet to issue a formal apology. Activists, however, believe the government is trying to put the onus on the Catholic Church and downplay its central role.
The Canadian government currently is trying to kind of put the onus more on the Catholic Church, on the churches, but obviously the Canadian government is central to this whole horrific history and ongoing colonization.
Indigenous children are not the only victims of racism in Canada. Reports say thousands of Indigenous women and girls have been murdered or gone missing in the country over the past 30 years. The National Inquiry into Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women and Girls says a genocide is being perpetrated. But that's not all. A deadly attack on a Muslim family last month in Ontario and attacks on women wearing hijab in Alberta testify to the fact that racism has deep roots in the Canadian society. A new opinion poll shows some 36% of the Indigenous people and 42% of minorities believe Canada is a racist country. Canada, a country with a dark colonial history, has for decades depicted itself as an outspoken critic of racism and a leading advocate of human rights. But the latest discoveries of Indigenous graves and attacks against Muslims show Canada is yet to take meaningful measures to root out racism in its own society.
And that's it with international news.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
Hame ba wujood qudde saratani Israel mukhalifin.
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel.
Wajh mushtarak hame wahdat ummat islami.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Televised speech on the eve of the 13th presidential election, June 16, 2021. People's duty with regard to the elections, participation in the elections, and what kind of participation. In the name of God, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Praise be to God, Lord of the worlds, and peace and greetings upon our Master, Muhammad, and his pure, immaculate household, particularly the remnant of God on earth. May God's peace be upon Ali ibn Musa al-Rida al-Murtada, God's great guardian, in the amount that God knows eternal peace as eternal as God's kingdom. I congratulate all the dear Iranian nation and all those who are eager to make a pilgrimage to his shrine on this occasion of the celebration of 10 days of Karamat, dignity, and the birth anniversary of Ali ibn Musa al-Rida, peace be upon him. Unfortunately, we have been deprived of making this pilgrimage for a long time. We are hopeful that God will increase his mercy and favor upon this nation due to the blessing of prayers and intercession of this noble Imam day by day. God willing, the blessings due to the Iranian nation being in the vicinity of this holy grave will increase every day.
Subhanallah, alhamdulillah. Allah, Allahu Akbar.
going to talk about the elections today. In less than 48 hours, a determining event will take place in the country. That is the presidential election and the Islamic city and village councils elections. Definitely the country's destiny for a period of time in the areas of economy, cultural issues, security, health, and the like is dependent on what you, the people of Iran, will, God willing, do on the Friday. This means that with your participation, with your votes, you in fact will determine the country's destiny in all major issues. The great task that people will do on Friday is primarily to participate in the elections. The second thing is the type of participation and the type of choice. The second thing is the type of participation and the type of choice. We hope God, the Almighty, will guide our hearts and the hearts of the Iranian nation so that we may participate in the elections in the best possible way. In one of my recent speeches with the nation of Iran, I mentioned that people's participation has a deep root and a firm intellectual backing supporting it. It is not just a political matter. It has many political benefits. But besides these benefits, and more important than these benefits, is the philosophy behind people's participation in the system of the Islamic Republic.
Just like a fascist empire would normally behave, another unilateral move by the United States once more promises to affect lives of people around the world for the worse, this time in terms of internet freedom. In an expected move on Tuesday, June 22nd, the U.S. Justice Department seized 36 websites with links to the Islamic Republic of Iran and its regional allies for engaging in, quote, disinformation campaigns and malign influence operations, unquote. The move initially arose suspicions of a hack since a disclaimer that said this website has been seized accompanied an Arabic text as the one you can still see on PressTV.com. While State Department spokesman Ned Price refused to comment. The Empire's Justice Department eventually said three of the seized domains belonged to the Iraqi group Qatar Hezbollah, while the rest, including Yemeni, Palestinian, and Bahraini outlets in English and Arabic, were supported by the Iranian Islamic Radio and Television Union. The seized websites obviously belonged to outlets of the allied resistance communities, better known as the Resistance Axis, that Iran supports across the region to counter the influence of the U.S. and regional rivals like Israel and Saudi Arabia. Try to keep a straight face here. The U.S. blacklisted us with designations related to terrorism. I kid you not. The mother of all terrorism, also known as the Empire, said that the American companies are not allowed to provide us with .com and .net domains without special authorization from the Office of Foreign Assets Control, OFAC. U.S. fascist officials can choose to label it however they wish, yet they will never be able to change the fact that this seizure is a clear example of a systematic effort to distort freedom of speech on a global level and silence independent voices in media, which gives us and everyone included in the seizure the full right to pursue the issue through legal channels. While the U.S. may have given itself the ability to exert influence over vast sections of the internet, its actions will for sure have far-reaching ramifications beyond its control. Those unilateral harassment actions will only give credence to arguments of U.S. interference and censoring due to fear of being further exposed by native media in nations they continue to sanction like Iran, occupy like Iraq, and bomb like Yemen. Welcome to the Middle East Stream, Amar Osman. More than 30 web domains linked to the Axis of Resistance, one of which is Press TV, were blatantly seized by U.S. agencies last week. The U.S. seized sites operated inside Iran, Iraq, Yemen, and Lebanon, as well as social media channels affiliated with the Iraqi resistance, the PMU. The seizures come as the Biden administration is in the midst of negotiations over Tehran's nuclear program and follow the election of a new president who has been criticized by Washington for being a staunch detractor of its imperial foreign policy. Now, the Iranian government condemned this act of censorship as unlawful and part of an influence campaign against the Islamic Republic of Iran. To discuss this issue with us in Beirut is Hadi Shatila, founder of iBreathe Media and a tech expert. Thank you very much for being with us, Hadi. Now, visitors of the affected websites by the seizure, by the U.S. Seizure, were greeted with a banner that says that the domain name has been seized by the U.S. government as part of, I quote, enforcement action taken by the Federal Bureau of Investigation and the U.S. Department of Commerce and the Bureau of Industry and Security. Now, if you want to define and maybe phrase this, just put it into words, how would you do that?
First of all, we need to understand one thing, which is that what happened was that the Federal Bureau of Investigation has seized the DNS side of the website, not the actual site. So it's what tells the when a person browses for a site, he types a name. The DNS service is what tells the browser that this name belongs to this IP address. This link is what the Federal Bureau of Investigation has seized. That's basically what happened in the first part.
So that would you putting it into actual words, but that actual seizure from a tech point of view, how much time would have that have taken, and what would the tools be that they use to do that?
Since they have access to the actual DNS service from a local company inside the U.S., which runs these DNS addresses, they can do it easily with one court order. They can directly seize control on anything which is considered on U.S. soil.
Mm-hmm. Well, have you an Immigration and Customs Enforcement spokeswoman had declared when that happened before, it declared that this act of we can call it internet fascism by the U.S., was performed that by the U.S. government because it has a right to seize the .com, .net, and .org domain names simply because the companies have the contract to administer them are based on U.S. soil. If that is the case, wouldn't such actions urge people to move away from these domain names to try and at least protect their work?
Well, basically, they should understand. The people should start to understand that since there is no actual real internet governance, which is in unbiased hands, they should know that whenever they buy any of these domains, they are susceptible to being seized by the U.S. government. Knowing that, if you want to go to the legal side of it, the U.S. should only be enforcing whatever is ends with a .us. So it might be .com, then .us, or like, for example, in Lebanon .com.lb, and whatever other country .me, for example. It depends on which country. So each country can have access to its own domains if it was the unbiased way to achieve such a thing. But sadly, what's happening is that they have control over all the .com, the .net, even the .org,
Since the companies that run these domains are on American soil, and VeriSign, which is the company that runs the .com and .net, is very closely tied to the system.
You mentioned VeriSign, Hadi, and it's a US-based internet backbone, a company that has the contract to manage the coveted.com and other generic top-level domains, the ones that you just mentioned, and it has a very cozy relationship, and I mean cozy, that's described by the US media, not by me, with the federal government, with the FBI, and has long had a contract from the US government to help manage the internet's root file, which is the key to having a unified internet name system. What would now stop other international corporations for assigned names and numbers from following suit of unleashing a global government crackdown on domain names that simply do not abide by Western values or Western narratives, or just simply are not liked by the US, the UK, or any other Western regime?
Again, sadly, we are at a point where nothing can stop such seizures happening in anywhere in the world, since they have ultimate access to all these things. There's the ICANN, I-C-A-N-N. They were under American control for some time, and then they released that control, and they started making 13 multiple organizations governing each part of the world. They are non-governmental organization. They don't get paid by any government. And they are one step towards global internet governance, trying to make internet unbiased location. But still, the US hasn't released its hand over these names. So we get to a loop where we are susceptible to have our domains seized at any moment just by being connected to any ideology or any political stance which is maybe anti-US or anti-West, or maybe not doesn't go well with the US comprehension of things.
Or simply, if you're going to compete with the US, we did see that happening to a lot of also Chinese websites where they were seized, they were put down. But I had a technical question concerning something that you mentioned about the .com.lb, for example. Is that more secure from the .com by itself? If I'm going to go with the .com.ir instead of just .com, should that be more safe than just going with the domain name .ir?
Your own country's domain, for example, in the Islamic Republic of Iran, there's the .ir, which is governed by Iranian law. It has nothing to do with American governance over the internet. So, of course, it's much safer to invest in your own domain. And maybe if you want, you can link a .com to it for SEO purposes, which later on might have other issues. But that's another technical path.
So you mean that only having a .ir might make it hard to find it on a search engine?
Yes, true. Because the crawlers work in a different way, and also the search engine itself might be biased. It might push things which aren't actually relevant.
Hello, Google.
Exactly.
Well, many outside the United States, like China, Russia, India, they distrust this U.S. cozy tech companies, especially with the big tech companies, the social media ones, and have been vocal about wanting to see control being shared all across the world, which is just fair, at least to say it's fair, of the internet's naming system. They want to see it turned over to an organization such as the International Telecommunications Union, an affiliate of the United Nations. Now, look, once you say UN, I, for one, as a citizen of West Asia, I am a bit panicking once I hear the word UN. Why? Because it is an international body, but it's a biased body.
True.
So what are we actually doing here?
Maybe this makes it less susceptible to U.S. seizure, but in the end, it will be biased. But since it presents itself as an unbiased organization, it gives us a range of movement to work with such institutes.
So it might actually protect domain names, or might just get them on board a certain committee that would have to study if that domain name
exactly.
is used or
it
not.
It gets them maybe on the side where instead of having, like, for example, you sleep and then you wake up with 30 plus websites being seized, you'll wake up with a warning, and then things will start to take a bit of meetings from here, discussions there, debates here, until they get to a certain...
But wouldn't that just threaten freedom of speech?
At the end of the day, it is
a form of censorship.
Exactly, that's what's happening.
Well, I want to thank you very much, Hadi Shatila, founder of iBreed Media, for explaining to us what actually happened when the U.S. blatantly decided to take over our websites and the websites of our sister channels as well. Thank you very much for being with us. It was great content from you, Hadi. And please stay tuned, because next we will be talking about what is going on in the occupied West Bank.
This is Midstream, and here is IRIB English Radio. Dear listeners, in this weekly program, Marvo Osman discusses two important issues related to West Asia region with two political analysts. Midstream is with you every Friday on IRIB English Radio.
Seems that death in Palestinian authority custody no longer differs than that of the Israeli occupation's use of ruthless excessive force against Palestinians during incarceration, and that's being said sadly. An outspoken critic of the Palestinian Authority, who intended to run in the parliamentary elections before they were actually canceled earlier this May, died during his arrest in Hebron by Palestinian Authority forces on Thursday. Nizar Banat, 44 years old, was a harsh critic of the Palestinian Authority, which governs part of the Israeli-occupied West Bank, and called on Western nations to cut off aid to it because of its growing authoritarianism and human rights violations. More in this following report.
Hundreds of Palestinian natives continue to gather on a daily basis in the city of Ramallah to protest over the death of activist Nizar Banat after being dragged by excessive force out of his home on Thursday, June 24th at 3:30 a.m. in the morning by the Palestinian Authority security forces. Angry demonstrators gathered in the city of Ramallah, the headquarters of the Palestinian Authority, to chant slogans against President Mahmoud Abbas 2 days after Abbas's forces arrested and killed activist Nizar Banat. They carried Palestinian flags, photos of Banat, and signs demanding the fall of the regime. Protests were also held in Hebron and El Bire. Palestinian security forces then launched a heavy barrage of tear gas into the crowd of hundreds in Ramallah and attacked protesters and several journalists. Earlier, plainclothes security forces spread out among protesters as they marched from the center of Ramallah towards the presidential offices and closed off the intersection leading to the area, forcing shops to close. One video from the protest showed security forces in plain clothes dragging a protester across the road as they simultaneously beat him.
القياده الفلسطينيه التقليديه هذه اللي حكمت الضفه الغربيه اليوم طول عمرها هيك بتتاجر بكل شيء.
But who is Banat and why is his death, which some is now dubbing as an assassination, so significant? The prominent Palestinian political activist and an advocate of free speech was known for his outspoken videos on social media criticizing the Palestinian Authority for its corruption, as well as its shameful security coordination with the Israeli occupation forces in the occupied West Bank. A former member of the Farah movement himself, the de facto ruling party of the Palestinian Authority, Banat had been campaigning as a candidate for legislative elections on the Freedom and Dignity list. The elections initially scheduled for May were postponed by Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas in April. While Abbas cited the voting rights of Palestinians living in occupied East Al-Quds as a reason to push back the elections, critics have accused him of seeking excuses to avoid a vote due to his party's unpopularity. Banat was well known for his extensive knowledge of Palestinian political and social history, often recalling anecdotes about the Palestinian Liberation Organization, PLO, in the 1970s or the British Mandate of Palestine before 1948 in order to make his point. In May, bullets, stun grenades, and tear gas were fired at the Banat family home while his wife and children were inside. Banat accused ruling party Fatah of being behind the attack and called on the European Union to cut its financial aid to the Palestinian Authority. Banat had also accused the Palestinian Authority of perpetrating torture on political dissidents detained in its prisons. Hence, his sudden death while in the hands of the Palestinian Authority sparked outrage and dismay in the Palestinian streets, which many believe has triggered the inevitable downfall of the Palestinian Authority.
So with us to discuss this issue is Mr. Ali Murad, who's political commentator. Thank you very much for being with us, Mr. Ali. Now, just like that, a brief statement was given by the Hebron Governorate saying that Nizar Banat's health deteriorated while he was in custody when Palestinian forces arrested him from his house earlier on Thursday, and that he was taken to a hospital where he was pronounced dead. This is definitely not the first case where we see a detainee dying while in custody of the Palestinian Authority security forces. However, this man was known to have faced direct threats from members of the Palestinian Authority. How come this matter escalated to a point that whoever arrested him ended up just murdering him?
Thank you for hosting me. Of course, martyr Nizar Banat was threatened nearly on a daily basis. He had told his friends and his family that he is receiving death threats weeks before the assassination took place. Nizar's problem is that he was outspoken. He never, ever was able to louder his voice when talking about the corruption of the Palestinian Authority and all the security apparatus that Mahmoud Abbas rules the West Bank using it. So Nizar Banat, I think, was the man who had the bravery and all the strength that many others lack. He used his voice to speak. He never held a gun to shoot at the security forces or any member of the Palestinian Authority. All he had his voice, his bravery, talking about what is wrong, the corruption, the security coordination with the Zionist enemy that Mahmoud Abbas is insisting on keeping. So I think other circumstances maybe has led to the assassination of Nizar, because after the battle of the Al-Quds sword, the Palestinian Authority sensed that the popularity, its popularity is going down. So
Mr. Ali, before I even contacted you to come and be our guest speaker, I spoke with four different Palestinian natives living in the West Bank who canceled right after actually saying, yes, we'd be happy to talk about Nizar, but they canceled because they were afraid that they would be incarcerated
exactly.
themselves. So it's a real police state there.
Exactly.
And as you said, Nizar didn't even have a weapon to defend himself, because weapons are also not allowed because of the coordination, the security coordination with Israel. But in early May, he had gunmen firing bullets, tear
exactly.
gas, grenade, stun grenades at his house while his wife and his children were inside the house. He blamed the attack on Mahmoud Abbas himself and the Fatah party. Now, is there something that could have been done to avert them attacking his house again, or is it just too complicated to talk about it as if it's something that should not happen? Because we don't really have a lot of information coming out of the West Bank.
Exactly. But we have to know something before to answer this, because if you take a look at the history of the relation between Nizar and the security apparatus of Abu Mazen, you'll find out that he was taken to as a detainee for like 10 times or 15 times before. He was beaten. He was at several times his bones were crushed, and still Nizar remained the same. In other ways, Nizar was sending a message that no matter how violent you were in dealing with me, in trying to oppress me, in trying to silence me, I will not be silent. I will remain speaking. He went to run for elections, the elections that Mahmoud Abbas canceled during the last month.
In May, yeah.
Yes. So all the voices that declared that they are against the way that Mahmoud Abbas is ruling regarding the elections and regarding the corruption with the coronavirus vaccines, also with all the security coordination with the Zionist entity.
The goal of the coordination with the Israeli entity, is it he learned from them how to suppress his own people?
Actually, he is getting paid to prevent resistance. This is the main role of the Palestinian Authority. The Oslo Accords made it clear that any authority that the Palestinian Authority to rule in the West Bank, it has to do this to prevent any act of resistance. Now I believe he Mahmoud Abbas moved into another step by silencing all the voices. Not, we are not talking about taking guns or putting resistance activists inside jail. We are talking about oppression, oppression that is not serving. It's serving the goal of a dictatorship. We are talking about a dictator now. Mahmoud Abbas has turned himself into a dictator. He is no different
options,
than other
Ali,
dictators.
What are the options left for the Palestinians in the occupied West Bank to try and at least fix the situation? We don't want Palestinians fighting one another, but what options do they have?
Because the Palestinian Authority is acting as an agent of the enemy, it left no choice for the Palestinians, for the majority of the Palestinians who want to resist the occupation. They want to liberate their lands. So we are seeing now, since the assassination of Nizar, there are protests taking place in more than one city and in all in many villages in
and
the West Bank.
It's on a daily basis. It's
yes.
not ending.
I think this is the available choice now. Maybe there has to be done, something has to be done inside the Fatah movement, because there are free people, there are real patriots in the Fatah movement. They have to rebel against their leadership. They have to change this leadership, because in the era of victories, with the victory that the resistance
achieved
the last month, this the way, the same way that Mahmoud Abbas is still ruling is outdated. I believe that
definitely incompatible. Definitely, it's something to really think about and give way for the Palestinians to decide
exactly.
for themselves. Obviously, but we hope the best for all our Palestinian brothers in the face of the occupation. Thank you very much, Ali Murad, political commentator, for joining us from Beirut to talk about the assassination of Nizar Banat, the Palestinian activist, sadly at the hands of Palestinian Authority security forces. Thank you very much for being with us. And please stay tuned. Next week, we have more for you on the Mideast Stream.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Oh. is Back to Reality. Back to Reality.
It's the show where we discuss the most topical of topics, the most controversial of controversies, and the most important affairs of affairs.
Roundtable from Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah, dear listeners. Thank you so very much for joining us on today's brand new episode of Back to Reality, brought to you by the one and only IRB English Radio. In the studio with me, I have the pleasure and honor of hosting two wonderful guests. To my left is
Muzaffar Haider from the UK.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah, bro.
Wa alaikum salam.
Thank you for joining us. And to the right of the ring,
Hassanain from India. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah. Thank you so very much, you guys, for being with us. I'm Zainab. Today, the topic is, what is the truth and purpose of my existence? Not my
your existence.
Sure, let's talk about my existence as Zainab and my existence as a species, a human being.
I think we all go through this dilemma in life where we're like, I don't know what my purpose in life really
is. Let's define, first of all, truth. What does truth mean? Does it even exist? And is it just a relative matter with no objective pretense whatsoever? And people interpret it on an individual level from one mindset to another?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good question. Does the truth exist? Short answer is, of course it does. And no, it's not an objective reality. You know, my truth is different to your truth or his truth or her truth.
So it's relative.
It is not. No. I'm saying it's not like that. It's not relative.
Well,
the truth is the truth.
Bro, what do you think?
Yeah, like, yeah, it, of course, it exists. Like, anything which is in accordance with the reality is truth.
Ah, back to reality. Get it?
Bringing it back to reality.
Get it? Yeah, okay.
We need to give references.
Yeah, right.
Our
true.
There might be different.
Imagine one day our show becomes so popular that people make references.
It is
to
indeed.
It really is.
Yeah, it is.
So you were saying?
Yeah, anything which is in accordance with the reality is a truth. Like, you know, if I'm telling you something, if it's in accordance with the scenario which has actually occurred, it's true.
So when talking about the truth of our existence, we have to look, I mean, based on what you said, we have to look at whether how we're carrying out our existence is in accordance with what it really should be. Who determines what it really should be?
The one who created us?
Yeah, I mean, there may be different perspectives because people will have different levels of understanding of what the truth is, right? So there might be one person, they only understand 10%. There might be another person who understands 90%, and so on. But
then what's the point of that person's existence if they are only equipped with a capacity of understanding 10% of the truth? Like, is that not why we're alive, to reach the truth in life?
No, not necessarily.
Then why is the truth important?
Okay, if we're talking about the truth as in the haqq, as in Allah, the existence, the cause for all existence.
Is that what the truth means?
If ultimately, yes, it's Allah, right?
Okay. The
God,
ultimate truth.
Right, the ultimate truth. But that is infinite. And therefore, one can never, ever, ever accomplish that in this life. Not even the greatest of us, not even the Holy Prophet, sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi. Not even he was able to comprehend Allah fully in this world.
Or in the other.
It's infinity that we're talking about.
Yeah.
And in order for people to really grasp this, or try to grasp this, try drawing a graph, you know, going from zero all the way to infinity. The graph simply would not end, you know. So when it comes to understanding the truth, you can only understand as much of it as you can. And yeah, and that's enough. If a person knows 10%, but
so
with that 10%,
yeah,
he can fulfill and accomplish his purpose in life.
That's exactly what
fine.
I was going to say. Perhaps that's our purpose,
so
to
like
understand the truth to the extent of our capacity.
Yeah, exactly. So like we need to keep trying. Like, you know, first of all, if we understand that Allah is limitless, so we definitely know that Allah cannot fit into our limited minds. So we need to keep trying the how much ever we can understand.
How much we can expand our mind, or how much can we go through the process, you know, like put effort into...
Allow me to bring this back to reality for a moment.
Yeah, because...
Let's define what the purpose is, because we've actually opened up two different chapters. Mm. We've asked, what is the truth? What is the purpose of our lives, or of our existence, right? So let's first address what our purpose is. So taking it back to the Holy Quran, وَمَا خَلَقْتُ الْجِنَّ وَالْإِنسَ
إِلَّا
لِيَعْبُدُونَ. Allah is saying in the Quran, I did not create the jinn or the humans except that they serve.
Yeah.
In brackets, me, right? So that is our entire purpose. That's the reason for why we were created, to serve him, to be at his service perpetually. Right?
Consciously or subconsciously is fine too.
Both.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Back to Reality. We're going to be back after a short break, so stay with us.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Back to Reality.
I'm here with my special guest in the studio, and the topic of today's discussion is, what is the truth in my existence? So, as you were saying, Brother Muzaffar, the purpose of our existence is to serve the Lord Almighty.
Yeah.
Right, whether we do it actively or subconsciously, right, or whether we're just a tool that is directed toward a certain purpose by divine hands, and we don't even know it. Because, you know, the way you say it, well, the way it is said, the way it is, right? Allah created us so that we may worship Him and serve Him, but then some people don't even know or believe He exists, yet they exist. So I'm like, why are you there again?
Well, Allah uses bad guys, for example, to do His work on earth. Whether you want to or not, you will ultimately submit to Allah. It's just a question of whether you do it willingly or unwillingly.
So it's this mandatory...
Yeah, I mean, it's not mandatory. Right? Everything submits to Allah. This is the way that I try to expand on it. Imagine that Allah is a writer. He is the writer, in fact.
Okay.
And we are just characters in the story that He is writing. Okay. When a writer writes a story, there are certain characters that he himself doesn't like, and yet he writes them. Right? There are bad characters
in
there.
To serve what
purpose? Right? But they still serve a purpose.
A plot.
Every character, you know, ultimately fits into that grand scheme or the plot of the story. And so you might be rooting for the hero, but that hero's maximum potential is only accomplished through the evil of the antagonist. The bad guys.
Brother Hassanin, where do you think you are with your story?
Okay, so...
How's the plot going?
Yeah, according to
How
me,
do you think this story is going to end? Is it a happy ending?
You know, like everyone has like different opinions. So according to me, what I think about life is, like, since we are talking about life. So in a person's life... like any person's life, like there might be two important days in his life. Like one might be the day he's born, and the other might be like he work out why.
The day he figures out why he's born. The I think this is a quote from who?
K Ray. Okay, so is it that like the day he's born and the day he works out why? Like he figures out why is he born. So now what I say is like people, they're different people, like different goals and different, you know, they want to gain some materialistic world, they want to gain some, you know, position and wealth in the world. So what I say is, like, we have not just come in this world to come, live, and, you know...
Die.
You know, like, take pleasures from this world. And at the end, like, some people, you know, they bury the corpse and...
How do you know that's not why we're here? You say it with so much confidence, but, like, what proof do you have to back up that theory?
Yeah, that's what... We look at the result, right? What do you do? Like, you die one day... You're either buried or they burn the corpse.
Yeah.
Like some people burn the corpse or some people bury it.
Yeah.
So you have not come into this world just to turn into ashes or
Why
just
not?
To mix
Why
up
not?
Into
All
the soil.
Other living creatures are doing it.
Okay, so someone, you know, with this mindset lives in the world that one day I'll be buried.
Yeah.
So his ultimate goal is to die.
No, maybe his ultimate goal is to fill up the time he has on this earth doing things that make him feel happy.
Then what?
And then he does, yeah. So what? I mean, no, my point is every other living creature is doing it. The birds and